This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Christopher Buckley is no stranger to the absurd. He's written 10 novels satirizing Washington politics and personalities, including Thank You for Smoking and The White House Mess. His newest, The Relic Master, is set in the Holy Roman Empire circa 1517. It's about as far from the Beltway as you can get, but with plenty of corruption and hypocrisy and superstition masked as science and art world chicanery, even a Bernie Madoff-esque scam to make contemporary readers feel right at home. The relic master of the title is a former mercenary called Dismas who buys religious artifacts for two wealthy patrons. A series of misfortunes forces Dismas, along with the painter Albrecht Dürer, on a quest to steal what is thought to be the burial shroud of Christ. Along the way, they encounter a lascivious count, a beautiful apothecary, a syphilitic duke, and a completing plot to steal the most coveted and well-guarded relic in Europe. The book has been called Ocean's 11 meets Monty Python, and we welcome author Christopher Buckley to talk more about it. Hello there.
Hello, Virginia.
So
you
please,
make this book sound irresistible.
It is. It's a great book and a very funny one.
I'm going to buy that book.
I think you should. Well, you settled in 16th century Europe. I guess you must have needed a break from Washington.
I decided that, you know, I write generally political satire, but I decided this election cycle, I think we've reached the point where American politics are sufficiently self-satirizing and don't need
they don't need any more coverage.
I think it does a pretty good job just by itself.
Well, for those who are unfamiliar with religious relics of the time, what were they and why were they so coveted?
Well, there were different kinds of relics. There were, you know, bones, kneecaps, ribs of various celebrated saints. Then there was a higher category of relics associated with the Holy Family. People had claimed to have strands of Jesus's beard, a straw from the Holy Manger, appropriate to be talking about this Christmas time. There was even on record, and I can point you to scholarly monographs on the subject, there was a relic known as the Holy Prepuce.
Oh, no.
Which was the circumcised foreskin of the infant Jesus. There were 12 recorded holy prepuces, which makes for a lot of prepuce. But anyway, there was a thriving trade in these things because they were, you know, they had value because pilgrims would come to venerate and, you know, pray at the before a reliquary, say, containing the thumb bone of Saint Anne, the mother of the Virgin Mary and such. And various saints came in and out of vogue. They were like stocks or commodities. They'd go up and down in value.
Well, you lay out a sort of wonderful kind of art world parallel to what we have today by setting the relic fair at Basel. This is where the book opens with Dismas. He's there to buy relics. So can you lay out the scene for us there?
Yeah. There was a yearly trade fair in Basel, Switzerland, where all the relic dealers would come. It was like, you know, like a trade show, that only instead of being at Las Vegas and about video games, these were relic dealers hawking their wares.
Could you read from us that there's a bit
sure.
in the opening of the book that sort of lays it out?
Okay. This is chapter one. Dismas might have purchased the finger bone of the Apostle Thomas, but there was something not quite right about the man offering it for sale. For one, his asking price was far too low. A relic of the finger that had probed the spear wound in Christ's side after his resurrection would fetch as much as 40 or 50 gulden, and he was asking only 15. More troubling was the absence of fragrant odor when Dismas held it to his nostrils. A genuine relic was always pleasant to the nose. Finally, there was the variety of items the fellow had for sale. The tongue entire of St. Anthony of Padua, an ampulla of the Virgin's breast milk, a stone from the Scala Santa, the steps of Pilate's palace, a few pieces of straw from the Sacra Incunabulum, the Holy Manger in Bethlehem, and shavings from the chain of St. Peter. A suspiciously vast array of goods. You know, all those things existed.
Well, I wonder what is true and what is not true in this book. That's a hard thing to figure out.
Well, I don't think I invented a single relic. Now, which isn't to say these things were real. Obviously, they weren't. But these were all items that were advertised as such.
Well, did they actually calculate how many years off of purgatory one could get with one of these relics as a character does in the book?
Absolutely. What would happen would be a bishop or someone above the level of Monsignor would be presented with, okay, the knuckle bone of St. Martin, okay? And he would, rub his chin in a sort of a knowing way and say, okay, 50 years. So
50 years off of purgatory
if you went and venerated and prayed and made a donation, because that's where, you know, you had to have the clink of the coin in the coffer, then you would receive an indulgence, which is to say so many years off your sentence in purgatory. Frederick of Saxony, who's a major character in the book, he is Dismas's principal client. Frederick of Saxony was the ruler of Saxon Germany and Martin Luther's employer. His collection of holy relics ended up numbering 19,013 holy relics. Here's the fun thing. If you totted up the indulgence value of all those relics, it amounted to something like 9,763,000 years off purgatorial sentence. You know, it's worth noting that Pope Francis announced a jubilee year of mercy and opened there's a specific door at St. Peter's Basilica, which is normally bricked up. But historically every 25 or 50 years, they unbrick it, and this is called the Door of Mercy. And if you make a pilgrimage to Rome and walk through this door, your sins are cleansed. And it is anticipated 10 million Catholics will come and avail themselves of this ritual and walk through those doors. So indulgences are, in a way, still with us, but the corruption part of it is thankfully in the past.
Well, these are the very indulgences that incited the wrath of Martin Luther, who is, as you mentioned, a character in this book. So is Pope Leo X and Lucas Cranach the Elder and the painter Albrecht Dürer. So why choose these real characters? What were you trying to get at here?
Well, I sort of stumbled into this. What got me interested to begin with was this extraordinary collection of holy relics owned by Frederick of Saxony. My ignorance being vast, I'd never heard the name Frederick of Saxony. Everyone knows the name Martin Luther. Mm-hmm. And in 2017, we'll mark the 500th anniversary of Martin Luther's famous 95 Theses protesting the sale of indulgences. Everyone knows the name Martin Luther. How many people do you suppose know the name Frederick of Saxony? And yet Frederick was Martin Luther's employer, and he became, after Martin Luther launched his famous protest, and everyone from the Pope, the Holy Roman Emperor, the Primate of Germany was howling for Martin Luther to be burned at the stake as a heretic. Frederick protected him. So if it had not been for Frederick of Saxony, it's very doubtful we would know the name Martin Luther today. And here's the irony. Frederick protected Martin Luther, but he remained to his dying breath a devout Catholic. And the other irony is that by doing this, Frederick undermined the value of his own relic collection, because as belief in indulgences waned, as Lutheranism spread, so too did the belief in the holy power of relics. So it was really an extraordinarily altruistic act of loyalty that Frederick undertook.
We're talking with Christopher Buckley. He's been called one of the funniest writers in the English language by Tom Wolfe, and his new book is called The Relic Master. You grew up in a famously Catholic household. I mean, we get a glimpse of that in your book, Losing Mom and Pop. This is your memoir of losing your mother, Patricia, and your father, William F. Buckley, within the same year. So did the lives of these saints or these relics, did they hold sway over you?
Well, I was raised Catholic. My father was very devout, and at the age of 13, I was
the age of consent.
Well, no, there was no consent on my part, believe me. But I was packed off to boarding school at a Benedictine monastic boarding school, Portsmouth Abbey in Portsmouth, Rhode Island. As you know, every Catholic altar must have a saint's relic embedded in it. So relics, you know, relics were a very familiar thing to me. You know, just and they're, you know, they're with us still. I went just for the heck of it. I went on eBay last week and typed in holy relics. If you scroll down, probably within a page or two, you will come to a replica of the nail that was used at the crucifixion. But, you know, here's the fine print. But it contains iron particles from the actual nail.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So there's still trade.
So it will be accompanied by a certificate of authenticity. You know, Frederick of Saxony, his nickname was Frederick the Wise. This was a very smart guy. So you could ask yourself, well, I mean, did Frederick really, you know, believe that this thorn that he was sold was from the crown of thorns? Did he really believe that this was actually breast milk for the Virgin Mary, 1,500 years old? And the answer is probably not. But Frederick's view was that if these objects made one more pious, made one, fearful of God's justice, then where was the harm in it? So there was, you know, there was a greater good. One of the other characters in the book, Cardinal Albrecht of Mainz, who also collected relics, he was in it for all the wrong reasons. He was in it to because they were cash cows, mm-hmm. because they would bring pilgrims. And he had big debts to pay because he had borrowed 21,000 gold ducats to buy his cardinal's hat from Rome.
Well, there are pages and pages of sources for this book, which we don't often see at the end of a novel. So you did a lot of research on life at the time, the heavy anti-Semitism, the sort of Byzantine politics and horse trading between the Vatican and the powerful families, the Medici families and the royal heads of France and Spain. And you were trying to get away from politics. Did you find yourself getting back there?
Well, I didn't go searching for politics, but you know, politics is everywhere.
Well, I'm sorry to bring you back to the present because it is a fascinating time. But I just wanted to note that you are really onto something. I read this essay that you wrote back in 2000, imagining Donald Trump elected as president. Do you think there was some prescience there?
It was a Wall Street Journal op-ed. It was his presidential inaugural address, which begins, if memory serves, "This is a great day for me personally." And who knows? The mind boggles, but maybe we will be hearing an actual Donald Trump inaugural address.
Which will probably sound a lot like that.
In which case, I am getting into the nearest time capsule and going right back to the early 16th century.
Well, Christopher Buckley, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Good to talk with you, Virginia.
Christopher Buckley, he's the author of now 17 books, including the most recent, which is The Relic Master. If you want to learn more about the book, please go to our website, wordofmouthradio.org.